What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay.
Who's in every episode as the other host.
Sometimes. Usually.
Sometimes I'm in every episode.
Well, so far, always, but we don't have the fullness of time on our side yet, so maybe eventually.
You just wait till you have a sick day. I'm gonna be like, it's time to record Popcorn Culture.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah.
The infamous long-awaited Ben sick day episode where it's 1 hour of Jay talking to Jay.
That's right. Which is sometimes how I feel when I'm doing streams. I like finish, I'm like, man, I've just been talking alone in a room for 3 hours. And I mean, not really alone because you've got the people you're talking to in the chat or whatever, but there's no one physically speaking back to you.
Okay.
And you need to basically be talking the entire time. That's the real skill, I think, of like really professional streamers.
Oh my gosh, there is no two ways about it. I mean, I think even going back to my early YouTube days, the absolute greatest challenge that I had with getting good at being on camera was getting away from the problem that is you were having a conversation with a lens.
Right.
And that lens gives you nothing. Like, you tell a funny joke and they don't laugh, they don't say anything. Like, you're sitting in a room like manufacturing this delivery with no feedback loop at all.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky because you put in all these jokes or what you think are jokes or what you think is funny, and you put it up and you have no idea if people laughed or if they were like, oh, stupid.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I know. Yeah, no, it's so true. So I think that was my greatest challenge, though, getting into this. I don't know if you have this issue at all. It always seems like you were a little bit better at just talking to the camera out of the gate, or maybe you just had more experience with it than I did. But I think when I'm having a conversation with somebody, and I even think why I like doing this podcast is that we're sitting in the same room. I can look at you, and as I'm telling a story, I'm looking at your like little micro expressions to like figure out how you're responding to what I'm saying, or if I need to hurry up or slow down or like add more details. I don't know. Have you ever watched the TV show House?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. House MD. So that's what he did all the time. And I think that I realized that I was doing these little things. Like, as I was communicating with people, I'm like looking for like markers to figure out like how they're reacting to what I'm saying.
Right.
And without that at all, I feel like my ability to communicate is at a complete and utter loss.
Oh, so you think if we were making this podcast and we were recording, like if one of us was on a trip or something, it was like, we got to record the pop. If we were not in the same room, you don't feel like the podcast would be the same?
I don't think that it would be the same. I think that there's enough inflection in your voice and in the back and forth with a conversation to be able to be able to hold a better conversation than what I would be capable of doing in like a stream setting, which is where you're just talking effectively about what you're doing as you're doing it, trying to be witty while also interacting like with the chat at the same time. But whenever I've been doing it, there's always the inevitable moment where I just run out of thoughts.
Right.
And I'll sit there and then my mind will do like the horrible anxiety brain spiral that's like, oh my gosh, I haven't said anything for 30 seconds and now it's 40 seconds and it's getting worse. And now all I'm thinking about is how I haven't said anything.
You get stuck in that like negative feedback loop.
Exactly.
And it just feeds into itself. Yeah, the tricky part with streaming in particular, or I think why I like, that's why I think gaming has probably come as a easy way for streaming to pick up, because almost at the very least, you can always just say what you're doing.
Sure.
Right? And then you can always look at the chat too, but sometimes that can slow down. There are definitely moments where I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm being interesting. But then I'll see some people's streams where they're just sitting there and there's just like a video of them in the corner and it's just a video of them playing as whatever's unfolding.
Oh, but that is like the ultimate thing about what makes different streamers popular, I think, for different reasons, because there is so much truth to the idea that some people are popular because they're an entertaining person to watch play a game. Like,
right.
They might be like really responsive or have like lots of like clever, you know, things that they can say about the gameplay, or they're just very animated and, you know, they're playing a horror game and every time something scares them, they are visibly freaked out.
Right.
Which on the other hand of that, I think the people who I believe to fail at streaming are the ones who I can tell when they are drumming up their reaction where it's like something scares them and then they like hold it for like maybe 5 seconds too long. And it's like, okay, it felt like maybe you were genuinely scared, but then you held it for...
Is that you housing them?
For effect. Oh, yeah. That's me like looking into like them knowing that those moments are the moments that people are going to like cap.
Right.
You know, and make into clips or whatever. And so it's like, ooh, that was a genuine moment. I really need to savor it as much as humanly possible. I'm going to keep my mouth open in the O formation for as long as I can. Look at the camera and explain. Oh my gosh. Wow. That was so terrifying.
Stop being afraid like 5 seconds ago.
Right. Like, yeah. The full effect ended a bit ago. And then on the flip side of that, though, people who are entertaining to watch play, I think that there are people who get viewership because of how good they are at the game.
Right.
And then at that point, your commentary on it is less essential to it being interesting because you are just watching someone who is an expert at work, basically.
Right.
And that is just in itself just a fun thing to watch unfold, whether it's gaming or really anything.
Right.
Like where practiced hands are involved, people are good at their thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever been the person who has gotten so good at like you worked at Panera Bread once upon a time, like at making a sandwich where like it would have just been fun to watch you make a sandwich because of how skillfully you could like slice tomato, turkey, lettuce. Nope, no aioli sauce.
Well, once upon a time I did work at the local Panera Bread here, and I will say that I don't think anyone ever would have found it too interesting to see me on the sandwich line or anything, but certainly I think I got to the point where I was better at assembling the sandwiches faster than any of the other employees there.
See, and that's exactly what I would have expected from you, is that you would have been like, well, this is what we're doing. I'm going to be the best at it, so here we go.
Well, it was like, that was like my first real part-time job ever. And, you know, they tell you you're supposed to get the sandwiches out in under 2 minutes, which, by the way, if you've been to a Panera recently, or at least the ones here, they are not hitting those goals.
No way!
Not at all.
Their breadjucation is lacking?
Their breadjucation is lacking, or they have changed some sort of standard, or they just don't care. But that's what they tell you, and they have, like, on the little screen, you would see the order and how much time, like as soon as the order came in, a timer would start. So, you know, even if it's 8 orders down, the timer starts and it, you know, it might get to 2 minutes before you even get to that order or something.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Now, of course, if you're going fast enough, they shouldn't, like the way it's set up, they shouldn't be able to like ring. It should also take less than, I think, 5 minutes at the register.
Okay.
So that's the other, I think it's supposed to, even maybe less than 2. So like, ideally, they shouldn't be able to send you an order faster than it took you to complete making the last one.
Right.
In a perfect system. Of course, there's more cashiers than there were people on the line or whatever.
Sandwichers?
So yeah.
Sandwichineers?
Yeah, we didn't call them that. But I do remember eventually, like, it didn't occur to me that people might not take that instruction seriously. But looking back, definitely, I took the 2 minute rule seriously, and other people just did not.
Right, okay. You know? Okay.
Which is maybe really predictable for teenagers working part time jobs.
So your work ethic was hailing more for your respect for the rules, maybe, than it even was from your own competitive nature. Like,
I think it was a combination of both.
Okay, did you fear like retribution if you were not getting your sandwiches done in a satisfactory time, knowing that your coworkers were not doing it in a satisfactory time? You still feared retribution.
Yes. It's like, oh, is everyone speeding? I guess I'm speeding too, but that doesn't mean I'm not afraid.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so I think that the crowd would influence my decision and that in my perception of the situation. Like, I think that if there are 5 cars speeding in front of me and I'm just following them, then at the very least, even from my own like internalized ethics, it would sort of be like, well, I was just following those cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good luck telling the cop that.
No, I know.
Would it change if you were the leader of these 5 cars?
It would change.
Ah.
It would change. I think if I was the one out front, I would expect to be the one who was setting the pace and then therefore responsible for everyone else going that.
See, that's so interesting because like, so you're in your mind, if you're the 5th person, you're not even breaking the law. You're just following.
I'm following someone else who is breaking the law.
But the person in front is breaking the law.
So it sounds to me like I would be a very, very, very dangerous follower.
Right. This is what it's like, because I have news for you. If the speed limit's 60 and the first person's going 80 and you're like, well, they're going 80. And so the next 3 people are also going 80. All 5 of you are breaking the law.
Right. Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. And so whichever car they choose to pull over, it's like, well,
yeah,
you
you're no matter what, you're going to feel like, well, that was unfair. And no matter what, the cop's going to be like, do you see this number? And you're like, yeah.
Okay, so for what it's worth, I do not speed ever. And I have had one speeding ticket in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I was so mad. Like, I feel like if I were to go back, if this same exact experience happened to me today, I think that I would have been even more mad than I knew I was allowed to be on that day.
Oh, yeah.
It was like this weird thing where, like, I was on my way out of town on vacation. And literally, I wasn't even attempting to be speeding. I literally was just on the interstate, and I'd been on the interstate for like 3 hours, and I had it in cruise control at like 78 miles an hour. And mm-hmm. I guess the speed limit was 70. So I was speeding, but like, I feel like within
the acceptable range of error.
Yes. Yes. The acceptable range of error. And then the speed limit somewhere for like 4 miles drops from 70 to 65.
Mm-hmm.
And so then instead of being like 8 miles over the speed limit, I was 13 miles over the speed limit.
It's a speed trap.
It's a speed trap. Right. Yeah. And so on this day, it's like literally a heat wave. And it was my first day off of work after I had worked 7 days a week for like 7 months in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like so excited to be off. We're driving mom's red minivan from growing up.
Okay.
The air conditioning is broken, and the passenger side front seat window is like stuck a quarter inch down, so it's like whistling.
Oh, great. Good noise.
Yes. And so I have seven people packed into this car with me, and I'm just like cruising along on what is about to be a, you know, 13 hour journey from Virginia to Vermont.
Yeah.
And I get caught in the speed trap, and I'm like literally physically sweating in the car because of the circumstances. It's like 104 degrees outside.
Yeah.
High humidity, not good conditions. And
no AC.
No AC. And the guy rolls up to me, and he was like, you know, you were speeding. And I was like, well, I mean, I think I even was like, I think I was 8 over. And he was like, can you even read? And I was like, yes. Like it's this weird thing where I feel like mom and dad always taught us growing up to in these situations, just be nothing but like respectful. Yes, sir. No, sir. Mm-hmm. The whole time, which I was attempting to do. And this guy's like actively antagonizing me. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening. Like, right. I'm being nice to you. And so I thought for sure, you know, like I'm sitting there in this like minivan, like car full of like boogie boards and stuff. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I looked like a punk 22-year-old kid in some capacity, but I was doing my best. Anyway, I got a speeding ticket. So
yeah.
Speeding is speed. It's breaking the law.
Mm.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. I want to say it's interesting that you were going 78, and maybe you weren't in the state of Virginia at the time. There's like a weird range, because I feel like 75 is a lot of people's like max, because most of this, I could totally be wrong here, but the way I know it in my head is that like, the difference between a speeding ticket and a reckless speeding ticket is reckless is over 15 miles over the speed limit.
Right.
Right. But also in there is anything over 75 is reckless.
Oh, I thought it was anything over 80 is reckless.
I thought that thing was 75. Maybe this is a difference.
Maybe. Well, I did not get reckless. So it is entirely possible that I have all of my numbers wrong, and I was going 74 in a 65, and then it was 60 or something like that.
I think a lot of times, if you weren't like being genuinely reckless, they'll just like knock it down for you.
Right, sometimes. Right. Well, and
don't count on that.
No, I know. But I think that was sort of what I was. I like actually thought I was going to get out of the speeding ticket. It was not something that I was expecting to be like this huge problem. And the other thing that happened with it, and of course you don't have to pay your ticket right then, but at this point in my life, I think I literally had like $257.
Right.
You know, and a speeding ticket is like $180 or something. So it was like,
there's,
I'm going on vacation, and it's like
speeding tickets.
There goes all my money.
Yep. Terrible, man. Well, you only got one speeding ticket. I think I got, not in a very long time now, but I think in my early days behind the wheel, I got like 4, I think.
Which is so shocking.
It
because
is.
Between the two of us, you are absolutely the more responsible human being.
Maybe it's because I made so many irresponsible choices.
Maybe.
I don't know. It was never, I don't know. There's that weird pressure when you're a teenage male, I think, that like the point of driving is driving fast or something. Like, I don't know where that pressure comes from, but
present. I think it came from like one member of our group of friends who I feel like was infamous for this exact
thing. This is infamous of all teenage boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Anyway, I don't know. I got a speeding ticket 4 days into my having a license.
Oh my gosh.
It was terrible. I mean, just the amount of disappointment I think I felt from like our parents and the amount of disappointment in myself and then the consequences of it were just, it was not good. But I'll tell you the story. We were driving. It was after cross country practice, and I think we were going. The coaches wanted everyone to go get like ice cream or something.
Sure.
And something like that. There was some celebration, so we just drove to this ice cream parlor, and I was like, "Oh, psh, I can take people. I've got a car now. Y'all can ride with me."
How cool!
I know, right? Psh, got my brand new, not brand new, my very old
1987
black Jeep Cherokee with gold trim. Woo!
The Jep. Because it was missing one of the E's in the front logo.
It was missing the E on the front. And so the rule was that you can have one, you can have a family member as a passenger plus one non-family member passenger.
I have completely forgotten that rule existed. Yeah. So that's a flashback for me.
That's the rule. So I had three non-family member passengers with me because... You know, wow. Whatever. What a how are they gonna tell? They can't tell who's your family. This is unenforceable in my 17-year-old mind or whatever.
The rest of the students must have been so impressed with you.
Exactly. Right. So we drive out fine, no problem. Got all my passengers, and this is the kind of rule that's really present because it only exists for like a year. Uh-huh. It's like during your first year of driving, so it's really present with you in high school, and like everyone just sort of knows it. So everyone sort of knows this is against the rules in the car.
Right.
Anyway, so we go get the ice cream and we come back, and I think I'm going about 40, 45, coming back to the high school, which is already in the middle of a neighborhood.
Right.
And so I'm just really bad speeding, and it's like the, you know, if you're a cop, this is like the obvious spot to sit because teenagers are bad drivers. And so he just, I mean... pulls me over into the school parking lot.
No!
which is just so embarrassing because, you know, the lights are flashing and you're like, oh no. And then, and I think that my fellow passengers, my fellow teammates, thinking in my best interest, were like, oh crap, you've got more people in the car than you're allowed. We should all get out right now so that when he talks to you, we won't be in here. But he's already behind me.
Oh yeah.
Know?
Oh
so,
yeah.
Yeah. All of a sudden, though, without warning, all three passenger doors fly open. Everyone just scatters
and shuts
the door. And then I get pulled over and talk to the cop. And he did not give me reckless, thankfully. That was good. Nor did he enforce the particular rule about the passengers. Because, I mean, I'm like sobbing. I'm like, this is the worst thing that could have happened.
No, I don't think I knew that.
Oh, this is so bad. It was terrible. Yeah, yeah. So
you're not much of a crier.
I mean, I was just so scared. I was just like, this can't be happening. It was bad. It was bad. That was not a good first week with my car.
Yeah, that's a rough one. That is, and I remember the argument with mom and dad, which I'm sure you remember plenty of arguments with me being the angsty middle child that mm-hmm. I was with mom and dad throughout the years. But that is one of the very few like knockdown, drag out, like yelling matches that I remember between you and mom in our childhood. Like basically ever.
Yeah, I wasn't. I mean, I think it was this, I had like tasted freedom and leading up to like getting a car and having my license, I wasn't really like really on top of it. It didn't seem that important to me. I know many teenagers are like counting down the literal seconds until they can get behind the wheel and have freedom and whatever. I was just like, whenever I get it, I'll get it. And I don't think I even expected to get a car, or like maybe I'd be sometimes allowed to drive our parents' cars, but you know, it didn't feel super important to me or super possible, but then it all happened. And there was just like a few days of freedom where I could just like, oh, I can just go to my friend's house or something like that. And it was the immediate, so we like went to, you had to go to traffic court or whatever. And basically the judge tells me I'm not allowed to drive it except from the house to school or whatever. But this is like a verbal command.
Right.
You know, so in my mind, I'm like, okay, but mom and dad will still, like, they know I've learned my lesson. They'll still let me drive around socially and I will obviously not break the law anymore.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
But nope, they were like, no, that's what he said. You can't do it. And I was like, but like, yeah, I know I can't do it, but like,
air quotes,
but like, I can do it. Right. No. The answer was no. It was, yeah. Anyway, that was my story of getting my first ticket, not 1 week into having a license.
Goodness gravy. Mm. What a wonderful time. What a wonderful time. I actually do think that experience for you totally did resonate with me. Like you say that everybody, like all teenage boys, like need to like speed all the time or whatever. I think having watched you get a speeding ticket, I was terrified to get a speeding ticket. So there probably is a lot to be said where I didn't have that like blissful ignorance quite as much because I had already watched it all unfold.
You are welcome.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Goodness. Well, that was a tangent of all tangents right there.
What are we talking about? Did we have a corny joke? I don't think we did. We just sort of really launched right off of it. Hey, welcome to the podcast, people. Ben, do you have a corny joke for me?
Hang on. I totally do.
The pop. What cast. Did... I'm sorry.
Oh, get it right, man.
I'm sorry.
This is why you are co-host.
Other host.
Wait, did I just give you the title that you've been asking for this whole time? No.
No, we're both co-hosts.
No, I'm host. Anyway, Jay, what did the left eye say to the right eye?
I don't know, Ben. What did the left eye say to the right eye?
Between you and me, something smells. It's the nose.
It's the nose. That's hilarious.
What a classic zinger.
Oh, man. Well done. Well crafted.
Thank you. Layers
to that joke.
You know, to be entirely honest, I Googled it.
Yeah.
I sure did. Sure did. Didn't come up with it myself at all.
I would have been really impressed if you came up with that by yourself. It's a pretty clever, corny joke.
Yeah. Not so bad. Not so bad. Mm-hmm. Do we have any quality feedback that we need to step into here today?
Oh boy, what did we talk about last time? We talked a lot about board games. I see you've posted something in our notes about playing board games.
Okay, so in our last episode of The Pop, we discussed kind of at length our childhood growing up and the different circumstances, almost maybe in some part due to birth order, in which you became both good at board games and as a direct result, I constantly both lost and became very unenthused with board games.
Right.
So we got an enormous amount of feedback on this.
Do tell.
Where we had so many emails where people were coming in with all sorts of different explanations, most of which I won't even name everybody because a lot, there were many of these emails. People were saying things along the lines of, I love board games, but of course I always win. And it was like, of course you love board games then. That's like my exact argument. It's like, that's why Jay likes board games and that's why I don't like board games.
Yeah.
Is because...
It's
because
like, no, you're wrong, Ben. I like board games because I win.
Right.
Like.
Right. But we did have, let's see here. We had feedback from Colonel Grace.
Okay.
Who I just want to admire for a moment for... She introduced her email with, Hi, Pops.
Oh.
Like,
oh,
so...
Oh. I get it.
Yeah.
Like we're the pops.
Yeah.
Like the fathers of the Popcast, but also like popcorn.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So she may have just invented some new terminology for the pop here.
And her name is Okay. So obviously Colonel Grace.
Colonel Grace.
Little Colonels.
Little Colonel
What's
Grace.
Up there, little Colonels.
So let's see here. So her solution to me, and I feel like maybe you've brought these up to me before, was to play collaborative board games.
Like cooperative.
Cooperative board games.
Yeah.
Tell me more about a cooperative board game.
Well, a cooperative board game would be different in that you're not playing against the other people at the table. Rather, you're playing against the game itself with the other people at the table. So you all have a common goal, but you probably have different skills as per the rules of the game.
Okay,
does that make sense?
It makes sense. When playing a cooperative board game, do you ever feel like there is still a clear winner?
No.
Really?
No, you win together and you lose together.
You win together and you lose together.
Yes. So, for example, one of the cooperative board games, probably my favorite one that we've played a lot of with a bunch of different people, is called Flashpoint. And the point of the game is that every member of your team is everyone playing is a firefighter.
Okay.
And the goal of the game is to save a bunch of people from a house that is on fire. And this house is like super determined to burn down.
Okay, so whoever saves the most people wins?
No. It's like, that is really not it, because one person's like every firefighter that has a different like class, like someone's the chief and they can like move the other people around.
Okay.
And someone's like the medic, so it's like everyone's trying to get the medic to the people because that character's role can move the people people faster and easier.
Okay.
So, like, you're all working, like, often everyone's just clearing a path for that person to go get them, or else you need to clear a path so that the truck can shoot in and somebody gets to, you know, be the person on the hose in the truck. So, it's never like, oh, well, we all won, but yeah, Beth really won because she saved six people. It's like, well, but the point was to get Beth to save six people, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I was waiting to see if I couldn't find holes in your explanation there, as to where if I were playing, I'd be like, okay, but you really want to be the medic, because the medic sounds like the seeker in Quidditch terms of this process. And let's face it, there's nothing more important than the seeker.
Well, it's interesting because maybe if you were better at board games, you'd have found the plot hole, Ben. Jeez.
It
is interesting because I often find that different people will desire different roles.
Okay.
Within games like this, so it's never really a big problem. And everyone, I've often been in a place where people are reluctant to take a role because they don't want to have like too much leadership or
like
they don't
responsibility.
Want to be, all of a sudden, you don't want to be the reason everyone lost.
So you can lose.
There's no.
If you're the reason that everyone lost.
No, that's how people feel, but that's not how it works. Because here's what ends up happening.
What's the difference?
What can happen in cooperative games that you have to look out for is that almost every turn becomes a discussion of what is best for everyone.
Okay.
So what can sometimes happen if you're like a more passive, not as involved person in the game is that like one or two people who are really like paying attention might kind of just tell you what to do, or might try and just, they might commandeer command of every single person's turn.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Like, okay.
I think it would be best if you did this and then did that, and then you did that on your turn so that you can do this on your turn, and then on my turn, I'll move you there and that there, you know? So that's what you have to be careful of, that one person doesn't suddenly just command what everyone else does and they're just moving the pieces around.
I was going to say, because that sounds an awful lot like going over to a friend's house where they've invented their own game that they're the only person who knows the rules to it, and you're not really following them and they're really just telling you what to do. Yes. Okay.
So that being said, you could pretty easily play Flashpoint by yourself if you wanted to, and
I was
just
gonna
be
say,
all six
yeah,
people.
Yeah. I imagine you having an entire day at your house, like, by yourself and coming over and being like, what are you doing?
I'm fighting this fire, man.
Is that a board game that you're playing alone?
Yeah. So you could do that, and even when I'm playing it, I think, man, this would be, like, a really fun video game if it could, like, you know, do all the tallies and dice rolls and stuff behind the scenes, and it's just like, okay, next you can move this character.
Yes.
Or whatever. But that I think is what you have to watch out for. But the more you play games like this, and I think it's very important, or I'm very cognizant of it whenever I'm playing a game, to really try not to do that. If somebody disagrees with you, or if they're like, I think I'm going to do this, and then you're just like, okay, well,
you know, let's deal with the fallout of that.
Often everyone's but it's what you said earlier, is that everyone's afraid of being the reason, so everyone often will discuss until everyone can agree on what's the best thing.
Okay.
If you can't agree, it's often whoever is actually controlling the person will be like, executive decision.
Okay.
You know.
So the ultimate irony here, I think, in my opinion, about my dislike of board games is that, like, one of the things that I think that I learned somewhat early on, I have always been, even since, like, high school, someone who likes to throw, like, parties, like, mm-hmm. like occasions to have people come together.
Right.
And I think somewhere along the way, or in the beginning, I would say that my goal was always, how do I get as many people to attend as possible? Because attendance means more people for the other people to interact with, and the perception that this is actively a fun party. Like, the idea being that a very well attended party is innately a good party, because how could it not be? There were so many people who showed up.
You're trying to, like, reverse engineer success.
Exactly.
At a party.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that over time, what I started realizing is that, like, I wasn't having that much trouble getting a lot of people to attend, but what I was having a hard, like, what, but it was like, what do people do once they're there?
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, has ended up being the grand challenge of hosting a party, is having the activity that, like, facilitates that gets people involved in a way that they are comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like board games are sort of the, like, most basic answer to this question. Like, a board game in and of itself is a facilitator of people interacting with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could just as easily go and sit down at a table and everybody, you know, has a drink or is talking or hanging out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the board game just becomes the thing in the middle that, like, is giving you a reason to be there.
Right.
So that is kind of interesting. And I feel like through the years, I've always tried to come up with different clever things that people could do at parties so that there's like...
I think I'm totally understanding where how we are viewing this from, like, where I feel like there's a different paradigm happening here.
Okay. Explain that to me.
Okay. Because you're thinking of like, yeah, if a board game is just like the lowest form of party and it would be... like, it's a thing for people to do, but it's the real purpose is to come hang out and just, like, talk. Whereas, I think from my point of view and the way I perceive other people often at my game nights is that the point is to play the game. It's like, it's game first, social second, whereas you're thinking of it as social first, game second.
You're exactly correct.
That is the 100%.
Difference. Yeah. Because I think for me, and I think maybe, like, you know, we've talked about it before, like, the reason why once upon a time, like, Diablo 2 became, like, this game obsession for me is because I had this perception that being good at it would, like, raise my stock with you as, like, my older brother. Mm-hmm. Like, well, if I'm good at this game, then he'll think I'm cool. And if he thinks I'm cool, he'll let me do other stuff to like hang out in general proximity. But it could have been the case that it may have just been like the specific entry point that like that I was coming to this conclusion that being good at a like this specific game was ultimately what was going to win me like social, I don't know, status of some kind. And you might be exactly right that I don't value winning the game almost at all, because what's the point?
Winning,
right? Yeah. But like, to me, winning, if anything, even within that same fold, is like to win against your friends is to then like have risen above them and be in a position where they are then frustrated with me for having defeated them.
Ah, this is a classic example of every single person does this, but seeing, okay, so I'm sure you've heard like the phrase, seeing the world through like rose-tinted glasses or whatever.
Yes.
Right. See, so you're seeing that outcome through like Ben-colored glasses.
Sure.
Or because that was your experience with losing games, was that the other person was then superior or something.
Right.
But this is like everyone sees the world as they are, not as it is. And so that I think that is a great example of you seeing the world as you are. Like your interpretation is that because that's how you felt, that's how everyone will feel in that situation.
Well, it's maybe not everyone, but I mean, I think I could flip that coin right back on you.
I'm sure you can.
Where it's like you perceive winning with being admired by the people who you've defeated.
That is not.
Okay.
No.
So what becomes like the yearning to win?
It just makes me feel better about myself.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Like because it means that you were able to like outsmart everyone else.
I guess it's just like, I don't know. I guess it's maybe not like I'm having difficulty articulating exactly like, I mean, like I don't feel like I've ever had to explain why you want to win.
See, but I think that's like what I always try to like reverse engineer when I think it comes down to it is like what is the actual, like what am I gaining through this victory?
I don't know. It just seems like to me the point of playing the game is to win. So basic, by doing so.
Basic yeah. enjoyment. Like yeah. you have
it's just,
functionally.
It's fun to win.
See, and I feel like that comes back to it though. It's only one person can win, which means that ultimately everybody else there lost.
No, but you're still, this is why it's game first and then social second. Because like, even losing, you're still there just hanging out.
That is fair and true.
Like, even if you've lost, you've still won because you got to spend time with your friends.
Sure. And I think that probably the bigger, better argument here is that throughout an entire evening of board gaming, chances are you will not have won every single
game. That is very true. Even people who are good at games, maybe they're competitive in every game, but many games have a certain element of luck to them.
Of course, innately. Of course, yes.
And, you know, other people are going to have played other games more than you, and so they're going to be better at them, vice versa. And yeah, most game nights are not like, we sat down and played a really one long single game of
Risk.
Whatever. It's like, in my experience, there's like often like a couple of short games, maybe you play, and then there's like a main game you're playing, and maybe you'll play that two or three times or something.
Okay,
and
okay.
It's always a little bit different.
Okay, okay.
Boy, this has been a lot of talk about board games in the past couple pops.
It has been. I think it's because it especially for you and I as individuals and on planet Earth, it seems like it has come up as a topic between us so often. And I think, yeah, I think it's just a hard thing to really oddly articulate how we're so similar in so many ways, but so different on this particular single thing, and trying to figure out why.
Right.
It, I feel like sometimes it turns strangely into what feels like a speaking to like a therapist.
Right.
Where I'm attempting to like delve deep into like the dark corner archives of my brain to figure out like, what happened, Ben? What happened to you as a young chap that something went so very wrong that you have found yourself in this position. So it's interesting the psychology behind it, which maybe brings me to my very next topic that I wanted to discuss today.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we have talked a little bit about how you and I both indulge in the television show that is The Bachelor.
Oh, Bachelor Nation, where you at?
There's like 9 people out there that raise their hands.
No, no, there can't be. Certainly in the listenership of popcorn culture, there must be more than 9 people who watch The Bachelor.
Certainly, at least there will be after this particular episode.
Okay, let me just say this too. Even if you don't watch The Bachelor, you're watching The Bachelor. Like, there's a Bachelor-esque show you're watching.
And I think we can speak in broad strokes reality TV terms here.
Yeah.
But I think that one of the interesting things about, and I feel like we can talk about this because we're not going to go so nitty gritty into like the specific details of like the episodes that are happening right now or anything like that. But one of the tropes with Bachelor in particular is that at the start and end of every season, there is always this phrase that the host Chris Harrison says where he's like, the most dramatic season yet.
Yes.
And, you know, and then cut to like all these moments where these things happen and you're like, no way, how could all of those things come to pass? I can't wait to find out. And you're completely sucked in and you watch every single episode with all of your friends and it becomes like a weekly tradition for you. The question that I have for you is that as time goes on and as there are dramatic seasons, dramatic things that happen, the show itself, I think, is in the same position that many TV shows, movies, any long-running stories face, which is, how do we continuously increase the stakes here?
Right.
Like, how is it true that it's the most dramatic season yet? Like, what would happen?
Well, they just say that. I mean, go ahead.
No, and I understand. Yeah. I think what you were going to say is they say that at this point. I think they're rather self-aware at this point as well.
The Bachelor in particular is pretty self-aware.
And I think that I think at one point in time, they weren't.
Oh, for sure.
And I do think eventually people were like, okay, like you say that every season. And it's like, and now it's part of the joke.
Yeah.
But it's also not true.
Mm-hmm.
Where every season does seem to like ramp it up a bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because you are, you know, in a sense, and of course I'm not like falling for the idea that it's, you know, quote unquote reality or anything like that. But I think as time has gone on, we have watched what you and I usually refer to as like the producer's role in the show become more and more prominent.
It does feel like in watching The Bachelor / Bachelorette for as many seasons as we have now, that over time the drama has come less from genuine interactions between the contestants on the show,
right,
and more from outside interference by the producers.
Manufactured situations.
Yes.
Okay, so the example that I want to give, and I don't think you need to be watching the current run of The Bachelor to be tuned into what this could look like. On every episode, they have group dates where they, you know, the person, the bachelor, the bachelorette goes out with a whole bunch of people. But then they also have one-on-one dates where you're supposed to get like your super specialized time. And each episode features what, like two?
Like two one-on-one dates and one group date.
Exactly.
Typically.
Okay. So in one of the more recent episodes of The Bachelor, our guy Peter is going out on a date with a girl named Victoria, and they're doing one of their pretty classic dates, like, you know, they shut down an amusement park and they went and, you know, go on all the rides because no one else is there and they get to just, you know, have an entire amusement park to themselves. But then one of the things that they do all the time is have a musical act come on,
right?
So like they'll go and they'll do all the fun stuff, they'll have dinner, and it's like, but the date's not over yet, now we have a private tour with, you know, whoever. And on this particular episode, they're like walking over from, you know, like their dinner moment, and like you can hear the music playing and you can see on the girl's face like, oh no, she recognizes the music,
right?
Because she used to date the musical act.
Right, she used to date the musical act, which the producers know about.
Of course they know about it. Like, there's okay So when you start to like try to comprehend what's happening here, and the musical act is a guy named Chase Rice, who is like a pretty big country music star.
Yeah, pretty big win for The Bachelor, because so it has become also kind of a trope on the show that the musical act, they always have to cut away to to someone on the date saying, "I can't believe so and so was there and we got a private concert."
Oh,
and
yes.
It's like they're always, and apologies if you're one of those people, but no one has ever heard of these people.
It very frequently, I would say at least they are not such big names that it merits the reaction that they're giving. You know, it's not like, oh my gosh, we had a private concert from, you know, Taylor Swift. It's
right.
like that would, of course, like everyone would be like, what?
Yeah.
Like that is incredible.
Yeah.
That it's not hard to understand why someone might be excited about that. When it's a much more obscure artist, though, it's kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling me that you're excited, which is giving it, like, a bit more value than it has just on its own name recognition.
So, anyway.
So, basically, in the scheme of things, and even within the scheme of The Bachelor, very frequently people on the show go on to become kind of famous afterwards. From being on the show. At least, like, through social media, they end up being, like, probably more than anything else, social media, like stars or whatever.
Right.
And most of their income, I'm sure, comes from appearances and brand deals and stuff like that attached to literally that exact following.
Right.
So, like, you know, Peter, the main guy or whatever, at this point in time, when you're walking up and it's literally you, the person who has become famous because of your involvement with a show, versus the guy up on stage who is, like, actually famous. Well, he was also on Survivor, so there's that. But also famous for, like, you know, who he is anyway. It's like, wow, that's a pretty crazy twist that the girl that he's on the date with used to date that guy.
Yeah. So the show would have you believe that this is a complete coincidence.
No way.
But no freaking way. Like, wow, we booked an act and out of all the people in the house he happened to be on, like, oh, if he'd have brought any other girl on this date, it would have been great and no one would have known. What are the odds at all? But it's become, you know, if you're watching this season, it's so obvious that this is not a coincidence in any way. And it becomes really clear based on the reactions of everyone involved that one, Peter, the main guy, has no idea
right.
that these two people used to date. And he thought this was going to be a cool thing.
Right.
Two, that the girl he's on the date with had no idea that she was about to run into this person, and that the musical act had no idea that the person he was going to be singing to was his ex-girlfriend.
Right.
And so then you watching at home are just so very aware that someone on the production staff absolutely arranged this perfect storm of awkwardness.
Yes.
And like terrible, like, because the show would present itself as a show that is trying to get one guy to find his wife and have this big, through a series of hyper romantic interactions,
right,
condensed down to 6 weeks. But you're watching it and you know the producers have to make it interesting and stuff, but this is such, like, it's so crossing the line into this was no accident. You intended terrible drama to ensue because of this.
Right.
Like,
right,
you are working against the protagonist of the show in a way that is stupid and unproductive. And
it is mean. Like, there's even a moment, and like, I think someone like got like the perfect shot where, you know, like, Peter of course doesn't know, and so he's dancing with this girl in front of this musical act, like, literally, you know, they're front center stage with a spotlight on them, and he's like 9 feet away serenading them, you know, with like a love song or whatever, and, you know, they have like this big kiss moment. He like literally like covers his face, you know, like the singer of the song is like,
right,
you know, he's got like his hands over his eyes, like, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. Goes against like the whole premise of the show. So sort of my question here, like, with in regards to, you know, all of reality TV is almost even like, are we finding like the structural limits? Because I don't think there's many people out there who watch reality TV and are like, this is real. Like, reality TV is an inappropriate, not inappropriate, it's an inaccurate title.
Yeah.
And we all agree and we understand that. But like, has it reached a point where it has gone so far that they're breaking even what can be conceived as shocking things?
Sure. I think in particular, you see this happening on a show like The Bachelor because it is uniquely positioned. Because if you have a relatively new reality show, it's not hard to introduce new drama because the rules of that show haven't been established or are newly established.
Okay.
So, like, for example, but The Bachelor has been going on for, I don't know, like, almost like, it's one of the longest running reality shows ever.
Yeah, it's like, Yeah.
Yeah, it came out, you know, shortly after, like, Survivor or whatever. But using Survivor as an example, which is possibly my favorite show on TV, that is a good example of the show over time has changed many, many aspects of the game itself.
Sure.
But every time they introduce something new, it just feels like the evolution of the game, and they're able to like raise the stakes or change the game. So in a way that is interesting for the viewer, it is different and challenging for the competitors so that it is not super predictable and feels fresh and new. But they had the advantage of their show being a game.
Yes.
And their gimmick is these people are on an island and they're going to vote people off and there will be immunity idols. You know, like the survivor part is you're surviving the social game and surviving the elements. And that, as long as that core thing remains true, you're there. Where The Bachelor, I think, runs into a bigger problem is that the quote unquote prize, and super air quotes there, is that you end up in a genuine real life meaningful relationship. Like,
right.
Your actual life is what's like the actual future of your entire life, and who you spend that with is potentially on the line. And the rules, quote unquote, of the show, or what the show is about, is, you know, hopefully you finding your soulmate, and you start with 30 men or women and you whittle it down to one.
Right.
Through flower gifts, I guess.
Yes.
Through rose distribution.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and it's like they can't change the rules but so much because of what the end goal is, and it feels like they've found pretty interesting ways to do different dates, they have the two-on-ones.
Right.
Those are interesting. They always pair bad people. It seems like, you know, if they introduce someone into the house who's pretty toxic, it seemed clear for a while that they'll be just like, just keep them around. You know, we know it's not going to be them, but that's good TV or whatever.
Right, yeah. So I've always called it the producer rose. So
yeah.
So very frequently, like, you know, you're watching the rose ceremony where he's choosing the people who get to stay, and you'll get to the very last one, and they'll be doing, like, you know, the confessional, like, talking heads that are popping up on either side, and it's this person or this person. It's like, if it's not me, I'm gonna lose it, you know. And then, like, it always that last rose, you're like, no, he's not gonna pick her.
He always does.
And I've always called it the producer rose because it's like, you know, that they were like, listen, you gotta keep her or him or whoever it is. It's like, they are making good TV and it's gonna make everyone else mad, and we need that. So you don't have to end up with them. That's no problem. You don't have to take them on a one-on-one date. You got to keep them, though.
Right. Like, you know that's happening behind the scenes.
Yes.
Absolutely. But so I think that's where The Bachelor stuffing is, that they've been around for a really long time, and it feels to me like they've all of the things that could happen, all of the things that can happen within the loose rules of the show have just happened.
Yeah.
Like, there's 100 different kinds of drama that could happen between the men or the women in the house or whatever, all 100 have happened, and they've all happened about 10 times now.
Right.
And you've seen it from every angle, and they're just like, they're running out of ways to do it. So they're having to, like, just get real mean to the people to, like, force it.
In order to have...
Or else it just feels too routine to the viewer.
Right. Well, to the viewer, and I think even because so many of the people that are on the show are, you know, actively watching the show. And so everyone, I think, is generally sort of aware of, like, what situations to get involved with and which ones to just run and mm-hmm. hide from.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, you always have to be introducing that, because you definitely can't introduce, like, immunity idols into...
Oh yeah, you can't,
like,
do that.
The Bachelor, where it's like I know you want to get rid of me, but
you
I
can't.
Found
right.
this artifact
yeah.
underneath the couch.
I found the immunity rose.
The immunity rose.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, I hate it, actually, but what a hilarious idea.
Yeah. I'm already thinking, you might not be able to save yourself, but there could be like a one-on-one, like a findable one-on-one date rose or something.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Like, someone finds it, it's like, you don't have to keep me, but by using, like, you have to give it to them, and it's like, you get absolute time with them.
Okay. You
know? Which would be, because that's, okay, now we're getting too into the nitty gritty of the show, but that could be that'd be an interesting thing to do.
That would
it's not a guaranteed I'm staying, but.
It would be an interesting thing to do because the one-on-one dates are rather selective. Like, you know, if it's however many weeks of the show are on, you know, you don't get to see every single girl who shows up go on a one-on-one date and get to know those people or whatever. So it would be kind of interesting,
right,
if they could have interjected that, because, you know, obviously by the very nature of them still existing in the house, it means that the person, the bachelor, the bachelorette, has at least agreed for them to, you know, continue to be there for that long. Okay, I like that.
Okay, there you go.
Bachelor producers, if you're listening out there,
we have ideas.
We want to help. Actually, I don't know if I want to help. I want to watch.
Yeah, you just want to watch
safely from afar.
Oh my gosh, I would love to know what other people's version of, because, like, this is the thing. I know all this, and I still watch anyway.
Okay, because that's the other thing.
That's the other thing.
The success rate of the show.
Why do we watch, Ben? Why do we watch?
Okay, what would you say if out of all the people who have ever won the TV show Survivor, only like 6 of them actually got $1 million, and all the other people, they just never gave it to them?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't still watch.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So why is it that with The Bachelor, there's like 6 actual successful couples that have come from the main show itself? Bachelor in Paradise might actually have a better success rate, which is like their spinoff show. But yeah, so why do we keep coming back when it's like you're so tuned into it and you're like, no, he can't keep them around. Like, you can't spend a lifetime with that type of person. And then it's like, they don't anyway.
I think the reason you keep going back is because, one, you need some sort of just garbage TV in your life. Everyone needs that, you know? And two, I don't think anyone ever likes being involved in drama in their own life, for the most part.
That being said, literally every single person ever on the show who says, I don't do drama, 100% exclusively does drama.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. So anyway, though, I think it's fun to watch because you get all of the benefit of the watching the drama without having to be involved. Like, you get to comment and you get to voice it and you get to see all of the tragedy unfold.
Unfold.
That's what I was looking for. Unvolve. Unfold without having to be involved at all.
Okay.
I think that's what it is that people, it's like all those like annoying things you had to, any weird dramatic situation you have ever been involved in. It's like, you know how terrible that was? Yeah. Yeah. It might've been fun to watch from the sideline, but going through it's terrible. So you can just watch from the sideline at all times.
So is it like would you say it's like the ultimate vicarious experience where you're just sort of like, you're getting the experiences by watching other people do them?
I guess so. Maybe that's a little bit it.
I mean, because I guess at the end of the day, especially that show in particular, because that's not unusual. I mean, like I get lost in like van life videos where I'm watching people who go and like live out of a Sprinter van, you know, in the hills of Minnesota. Does Minnesota have hills? I don't know. Somewhere. But I can see where that's not like mass appeal. Like, to me, it takes all these complicated moving parts of my life and it gives me like a super condensed, like 170 square foot space that is all you have to worry about. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I love to escape to that thought because it's like, oh my God, there's so few things to worry about. Like, I could be so good at everything I did if all I had to worry about was that 170 square foot space.
Right.
So that's why I like that, but probably everybody wouldn't. What is it about? I think it just has to be the case that everybody in some capacity is in pursuit of love, right?
I think that's probably it too, is that everyone's in pursuit of love, and you can see like the worst version of that journey.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
You're just guaranteed to get to like some sort of train wreck every week.
Okay, so let me bring you to my next and final point, because it gets to involve the viewers a little bit. Is what I want more than anyone is someone I know to go on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette.
Oh my gosh.
Because I want to ask them every single question I've always had.
Oh, but they're not going to be able to answer.
Well, maybe they would. I'm very... People open up to me, Jay.
That's true. People do open up to you in a way that is unusual to watch from the sideline.
You call it... What do you call it?
You have a quality. Ben has a quality.
It never feels like you're complimenting me when you say it. Like,
no, the word is quality, Ben. Quality is good.
Okay. Okay.
You'd probably be a good bachelor. Everyone would just open right up to you. Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. I will say that prior to dating Allie, whenever I had watched the show, I did more often than I would care to admit, I could be on the show. Like I was like, I could do this.
You could get on.
I feel like I could do it. I feel like it would be fun.
Okay. So question for the viewers, for the listeners of the pop, have you ever either been on or known someone who is a contestant on The Bachelor?
Or Bachelor or Bachelorette. I would even say reality TV show.
Or just
show.
On a reality TV
yes.
show.
Yeah, we can go that
we
broad.
We want to hear your story.
Especially if you know someone who's been on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, because that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I want to know, because surely people know these people. Half the time they know each other.
I mean, there's been so many people who've been on the show at this point.
Right.
That... you know, the 6 degrees of human contact, or, you know, Kevin Bacon or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
You know, there someone listening to this knows someone who's been on the show.
Okay, so if you're out there and you know one of those people, be sure, let us just email us at popcornculturepod@gmail.com and tell us your story, because we want to know.
We do want to know.
Yeah, I think that would be absolutely fascinating. I'm super giddy.
You're excited for the emails?
I'm excited for the emails. I'm always excited for the emails.
Send Ben your emails.
Send them, yeah. Yeah, popcornculturepod@gmail.com.
Yes.
Or you can follow us over on Twitter. It's a popcast. Is that what it's called?
A popcast.
A popcast. At a caps popcast.
Yes.
A popcast.
A popcast.
Yeah, okay. I know our own handle.
Yeah, of course.
It's so hard.
You're a good host.
Oh yeah. Thank you. I needed that. I'm taking it as very genuine. No, the internet is such a huge and vast
quality
place.
Host.
I see what you did there. Now you're just throwing things at me. No, the internet is such a huge and weird place in that, like, whenever we want to start a new show, the first thing we have to do is go and check to see if any of the social media things are available at all.
Oh, gosh.
And they never are. It's like, it is always the moment in my life when it occurs to me that there is no such thing as an original thought anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone else, somewhere else, somehow, some way, has not only had the same thought, but gone so far as to secure that email address before you did.
Yeah. Very frustrating.
Goodness me.
Yep.
So anyway, all of our, I don't think any of our socials are the same. They're all different. But be sure to go and follow us on there or leave a review. It does helps the pop out. Just a jolly bundle.
A jolly bundle. And we all love a good jolly bundle. Thanks so much for listening, as always. And please be sure to send Ben all your emails about whether or not you know someone or you personally have been on a reality TV show.
Otherwise, until next time.
Bye.